Hi, everyone. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford, as always, joined by the one and only Wes Hodkowitz. We're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And Wes, our final show of the week, previewing Packers Cowboys for Sunday afternoon down at AT&T Stadium in Dallas. And we usually like to focus this final show on the keys to the game. And if we start with the Packers on the offensive side of the ball, I hate to state the obvious, but when you're going up against a defense that features the league leader in sacks,
right,
in DeMarcus Lawrence with 7.5 sacks through four games, the first key that comes to mind has to be pass protection, right?
Absolutely. And also the thing that interests me a lot with this is that Rod Marinelli's defense, the coordinator for the Cowboys, blitzes, you know, less than any other team in the NFL. They go with a lot of four-man pressure. He puts it on his defensive linemen to get home.
Yep.
And when you look at DeMarcus Lawrence, he has done exactly that so far this season. This is a young man with 9 sacks in his career before this year, 7.5 in the first four games. Really seeing him take that step now in his fourth NFL season and, you know, making his presence known. From the Packers' perspective, I know you were a part of the news conference that Mike McCarthy had on Friday morning, him saying they're going to go through this whole weekend, decide what the plan is with David Bakhtiari and Brian Bulaga, see if either one of them or both of them are back in the plans. And if they aren't, then you continue on with this hodgepodge grouping that they have with Lane Taylor at left tackle and Justin McCray at right tackle.
Yeah, and then Lucas Patrick filling in
right
for Taylor at left guard. Yeah, McCarthy said really the Saturday practice, the team's final workout right before they get on the plane to go to Dallas, that final practice on Saturday will really determine just where they are with Bakhtiari and Bulaga, hopefully for Green Bay's sake, coming back from those injuries. But we discussed earlier in the week some of the issues with the Packers' offensive identity and that not really taking shape yet due to the injuries and just all the lineup shuffling that's going on. But if there are two things that that the Packers can hang their hats on in terms of trends that you definitely want to continue, it's third down offense and red zone offense.
Because
the Packers are ranked third in the league on third down, converting at, I believe it's at 49% for the season. And then you look at the red zone, the Packers have had 14 possessions in the red zone, no empty trips, 11 touchdowns out of 14 red zone possessions, and then 3 field goals. So that's about as efficient as you can get when you combine that the third down production and the red zone production. And regardless of who's in the lineup, the Packers would love to see that continue.
Yeah, Mike, and that's something that's very interesting too. And I thought back about this a couple days ago, even before we began this discussion about their rankings and where they sit in a lot of these really critical categories. The fact that we're through a month of the season now, we really haven't had to talk about Mason Crosby at all. I think kind of speaks to their efficiency on offense. He's not trying any, you know, 50-yard type field goals. He's obviously not been summoned that often inside the red zone because the Packers have been able to sustain those drives. And I think, to me, when people talk about identity, that's a great one to have. And that's something that really stands out to me in terms of what you can do early in the season to set yourself up for the long haul. We talked about the weapons, the Jordy Nelsons and the, you know, the Martellus Bennetts and all these different avenues they can go to. Well, in some ways, I think they're still looking for some of those explosive down-the-field plays. They are getting a lot of really efficient play when it comes to moving the chains from a lot of different people.
Yeah, it's funny that you bring up Mason Crosby because I had this thought this week and didn't get a chance to talk to him in the locker room or ask him about it. But you wonder with a guy like that, a veteran player, going back to AT&T Stadium now, you know, 9 months later after that January playoff game, What's that going to feel like for him to walk back in there? Because you're talking about an accomplished veteran player, and that was the location of the crowning moment, really, of his career. Those two 50-plus yard field goals to win that playoff game, it doesn't get any better than that for a kicker. I just wonder psychologically what that'll be like for him on Sunday to walk back out on that field.
Yeah, it's a great point, Mike. And you also got to remember, too, this is one of the 5-6 guys left on this team from Super Bowl 45.
That's
so
right.
He had a defining moment in that game as well, kicking in that environment, in that stage. So a lot of positive memories for Crosby. But it does, from an individual perspective, the biggest game of his career to date, which now spans over a decade, you know, making 2 50-yard field goals in the final 1 minute and 22 seconds of a ball game, really having to go tit for tat right across, you know, with what the Cowboys were doing.
Yeah, because Dan Bailey's certainly no slouch as a kicker either.
Yeah, Bailey walks out, and I think he aced a 51-yarder during that stretch as well. So Crosby, interesting way that this year has started. Only 4 field goals, all within 40 yards. He's made all of them, you know, 12 for 12 on extra points. So pitching a clean slate here so far, and I imagine, especially being from Georgetown, Texas, and all the tie-ins with his family, this will be a special moment for him as well going back this weekend.
Yeah, I would agree. But we've got some more keys to the game to talk about on the defensive side for the Packers. We'll get to that after the break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford in this chair, Wes Hodkiewicz in that one. Wes, shifting gears to the defensive side of the ball for the Packers and the keys to the game. Again, I don't want to be Mr. State the obvious here, but Ezekiel Elliott is the defending NFL rushing champion, and I know through the first 4 games of 2017 he's not anywhere near the pace that he was last year statistically. The rough day he had against the Denver Broncos is really the main reason for his statistics being where they are right now, but on the defensive side for the Packers, this game starts without question with trying to stop Ezekiel Elliott.
Yeah, Mike, and I want to take you back in a time machine with me now, you know, 9 months to that NFC divisional playoff game, and the thing that stands out to me the most about it is if you wanted to draw a picture of what a fast start looks like, the Packers got it in that game. They got 3 touchdowns right off the bat offensively, and they contained Elliott. He still had 10 carries for 44 yards in the first half, but none of them were longer than 9. So, I mean, I think that's the biggest thing, is I look at him in the same category that you look at the A.J. Greens and the Julio Joneses, the guys that they're going to get production in most cases. I know he had a rough game against the Broncos, but in most cases, he's going to get his yards. You can't let him get those back-breaking runs. And one thing I think the Packers defense has done an exemplary job of so far this season, whether it's the run or the pass, they have limited those explosive plays. They're one of only 3 teams in the league right now that have not had a play of more than 40 yards. That goes such a long way because it breeds into that same thing that Dom Capers always talks about in terms of having, you know, a penalty, an unsportsmanlike, you know, a 15-yard penalty, and how that translates to points. The Packers have minimized that. They've made teams go the long way, and it's resulted in them being the 5th, 6th-ranked defense right now in the NFL.
Yeah, when you look back at that playoff game in January, it really was the explosive plays that helped the Cowboys come back from that fast start. If I remember right, when the Packers were up 21-3 in the second quarter, all of a sudden there was a 20-yard pass to Dez Bryant and a 40-yard pass to Dez Bryant into the end zone. 2 plays, 60 yards, Dez Bryant has a touchdown, and it's a brand new game just like that because of those explosive plays, which the Cowboys in their home stadium with their home crowd and with a quarterback like Dak Prescott and a running back like Zeke, they can execute those at any time, just like the Packers can. So I don't know what you think going into this game, and it's always hard to predict exactly how these things are going to go. But I really see a game that could be very much like the playoff game last January in terms of high scoring. It could be close. If either team, I think, gets ahead by a couple of scores, I see the other team making a rally because of the explosiveness of these offenses to get back in the game. I think we could be seeing or could be heading into kind of a replay of January in terms of the final score.
It is interesting, Mike, because I kind of look at this Dallas team a lot like I think I looked at like the 2009 Packers. I don't want to say 2010 because obviously they won the Super Bowl, but this is a team with a young quarterback in terms of his starting experience,
right?
A younger running back, but they do have veterans on this squad. You look at their defense; there's a lot of guys there who have been through the league. I mean, they've been in there 6, 7, 8 years.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Martellus Bennett was even talking about this week. Orlando Scandrick is the only guy left from, I think, that 2008 draft class that he entered with the Cowboys. So they have experience where it counts, and they have really young talent at a lot of those skill positions. So
no doubt.
That mesh together, I think, is what makes Dallas really as dangerous as they are and gives them a chance in any given week to put up points. To your point, I would have a hard time trying to give you a score prediction on this thing.
Yeah.
I could see it being lower scoring, better than average chance. It's probably going to end up being points will be put up on the board. But I wouldn't be surprised by either scenario playing out.
Yeah, and the X factor in all this, as it is every week, and again, something that we saw in the January playoff game, is the turnover factor.
Right.
When Dak Prescott came into Lambeau Field in October last year, he hadn't thrown an interception as an NFL quarterback yet. Morgan Burnett got the first one against him. We all know how big that interception was by Micah Hyde when the Packers were trying to protect that lead in the second half of the January playoff game. By the same token, when the Packers maybe had a chance to throw the knockout punch, Jeff Heath got a big interception right. for the Cowboys when the Packers looked like they might have a big downfield play. I believe it was to Davante Adams, and Heath came flying over from the safety position, made a diving interception. That changed the whole tenor of the second half there in Dallas for that playoff game. So turnovers are always the great equalizer. They're always the big factor, and you know, at least for what the Packers have going for them after a slow start in the turnover category, they got four against the Chicago Bears right. last Thursday. You hope maybe that's the trend that continues.
Yeah, and I mean, you go back too, and you look at that, the Micah Hyde interception in that game in the playoffs. I mean, that really was, for all intents and purposes, an eye for an eye kind of game. It just seemed like when one player or one team threw a punch, the other team came right back.
Yeah.
And ultimately, that's what ended up leading to the catch from Jared Cook. I will be interested to watch this game develop, though, in terms of if Sean Lee, whether or not he's playing. You know, now you see a guy, I think it was Teron Smith, ends up not practicing somewhat this week at their left tackle.
Yeah, the all-pro left tackle is on the injury report.
So I think this is probably the first game this year. The Packers obviously have dealt with injuries, but I will, when we get that 90 minutes before game time, seeing exactly who's playing for both teams, I think it's going to have a large say on how this game gets played.
Yeah, we'll be watching that closely, no doubt. But with that, we're going to throw it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, you wrote a story on Packers.com that I found really interesting this week, and it was about Packers safety Morgan Burnett. We've talked a lot about him, obviously, with regards to the Nitro defense, the multiple roles he's playing, inside linebacker, slot cornerback, and we know about his leadership in the locker room and what the locker room thinks of him and the cachet that he carries as a veteran player on this team. But he's got a kind of a new leadership role on the field now as well in terms of the communication with the defensive coordinator. What'd you find out about that?
Well, what's interesting, Mike, in this very studio is where I got the idea for that story. And it stemmed from a conversation that Larry McCarron had with Mike McCarthy on his show. And McCarthy saying and crediting Morgan Burnett, who received a game ball in that victory over the Bears, for being the key communicator and really having a large influence on this being the best communication a defense he thinks has had, you know, so far early in the season during his time as a head coach. So Dom Capers has alluded to it a couple times, but I actually, it was the first time I actually got in there and got a chance to talk to Morgan about it. They did tease this a couple years ago. They tried this with him. Wasn't quite ready for the role yet. They handed it back to their inside linebackers. But this year, with how much he was going to be on the field, particularly with this Nitro Nickel package, this was kind of the way it was going to have to go. Really, him and HaHa Clinton Dix are the only guys that don't seem to ever leave the field right now.
Yeah.
And Clinton Dix is on the back end. Burnett is in more towards the box now in this position he's playing now. So I think Burnett welcomed it. He wasn't going to say no to it. But it was interesting hearing kind of how Dom Capers and his position coach Darren Perry sort of presented it to him, initially mentioning that, well, you know, Darren played a similar role like this in Dom's defenses with Pittsburgh back in the 90s.
Yeah.
The only difference was there wasn't communication helmets there, and, you know, teams weren't routinely lining up in no-huddle formations.
Yeah, and I think that's the biggest thing when you look at the evolution of NFL offenses, which has led to, obviously, the counterpunches and different schemes by NFL defenses. When it comes to deciding, okay, who, because you can only have one
right.
on the field, who's going to wear that helmet with the speaker, who's going to get the audio call from the defensive coordinator to then relay it to the rest of his teammates on the field, you have to pick somebody who is an every down player.
Right.
And as you mentioned, you know, traditionally it's been linebackers, but now we're seeing that the Packers are certainly not the first team to go with you know, a safety in this hybrid linebacker spot. It's becoming more and more common around the league, which means that it's a lot harder to give that communicator, give that radio headset, you know, inside the helmet to a linebacker. So then, yeah, it does fall on a safety. If you look at it from the standpoint of a defensive lineman or a cornerback, yeah, a lot of those guys play every down as well, but their responsibilities are not as much about getting guys lined up and knowing the entire scheme. They're, you know, they're a little bit more assignment focused, you know, so it does have to fall on a safety. And, and, you know, lucky for the Packers, they have two pretty good ones. They could certainly, I think, go with Clinton Dix as well, but I think Morgan, with him being more near the box and just his veteran experience, he seems to be the choice.
Well, keep this in mind too. Now that they have, you know, Clinton Dix now 3 years into his career, an all-pro safety, a Pro Bowl safety, he really is in a position now where he's able to communicate a lot of that stuff on the back end. So that's almost what I think in some ways frees Burnett up to be hanging out there near the line of scrimmage and talking with the defensive linemen and the linebackers. Found it really interesting. I had a chance catch up with Ricky Jean-Francois a little bit about this.
And okay.
So many times, Mike, we talk about these defenses that the 49ers played in the late 2000s and early 2010s and how dominant that group was. Navarro Bowman, you look at Patrick Willis,
yeah.
Those were the key communicators in that defense. And then Jean-Francois mentioned, you see, you know, Deshaun Goldston start taking over those duties, who was the safety there. He was still on the back end, but he started taking over those responsibilities. And really, over the last 5 years, how this has evolved, the thing that Burnett gives you in specific for the Packers is he gives you a guy that not only is a leader, but also can stand up to the run and gives you everything that you need from that position.
Yeah, I mean, Morgan Burnett off to a great start with a very multifaceted role in this Packers defense. It's going to be fun to watch as the season continues. But before we go to a break, Wes, we'll take care of a little sponsor business. Picture this. You and a friend are sitting VIP in plush leather recliners watching the Packers on the 50-yard line at Lambeau Field. Nice picture, isn't it? Well, if you enter Cousin Subs' Best Seats in the House promotion, you and a guest could win a chance to kick back on the 50-yard line in style. Two pairs of lucky Packers fans will be chosen prior to each home game for this VIP experience. Enter daily now through December 11 by completing the entry form and submitting. For complete rules and eligibility, go to packers.com/best seats. Cousin Subs, we believe in better. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford here, Wes Hodkowitz over there. And Wes, before we go, as we like to do when we finish up our week of shows, we take a look at the weekend slate of games in the NFL and what jumps out. And for me, it's three games that jump out in terms of the implications in the NFC and the implications on the Packers and where they stand. Carolina is at Detroit, a pair of 3-1 teams, and obviously Detroit being tied with the Packers on top of the NFC North right now. You have Seattle at the Rams. The Seahawks need to avoid dropping to 2-3, and they're trying to sort of maybe put the brakes on the LA Rams hype train here with the Rams at 3-1. And then on Monday night, you've got Minnesota at Chicago, and it will be the debut of quarterback Mitch Trubisky, the top pick in the draft by the Chicago Bears, and the trade that they made, the surprising trade that they made in the draft to snag him with the number 2 overall pick. So those are the three games that jump out at me. Where do you want to start?
I want to start with that Vikings-Bears game.
All right.
Because this is, you want to talk about identities. Minnesota and Chicago have to figure out their identities quickly.
Yeah.
If you're the Vikings now, you don't know when you're getting Sam Bradford back. You know how those bone bruises are. It could be 1 week, it could be three, it could be six. Who knows? And if you're the Bears, well, now you're in the Mitch Trubisky game. So what do you have in him? Then you add in the other factor, Delvin Cook's gone now. You spent this money on Latavius Murray during the offseason. He's obviously, you know, I think dealt with some surgeries, been off to kind of a slow start. Can he be a bell cow back? Vikings looked really good at the start of the year, and then they looked good again in that win where Keenum had 370 passing yards.
Yeah.
But what team are they? Now,
right.
From the Bears' perspective, Mitchell Trubisky, you can't. Everybody calls for the backup quarterback. Everybody calls for the rookie. Well, he's in the game now.
Yeah, Monday night ESPN, I guess, maybe couldn't have planned it any better than to get the Trubisky debut on national TV there on Monday Night Football. But when you talk about a team and exactly who are they, I'm wondering about the Carolina Panthers into Ford Field in Detroit, because Carolina is 3-1. This is a team that was in the Super Bowl 2 years ago. Then they missed the playoffs last year. And now this is a team that 2 weeks ago they got pummeled at home by the New Orleans Saints. Then they go on the road to Foxborough and knock off the Patriots with a last-second field goal. So who exactly are the Carolina Panthers? I think we know who the Detroit Lions are, and this is a huge opportunity for Detroit at home to tag a loss on another potential NFC contender. But this is also an opportunity for Carolina to say, hey, we're back. We're a lot more like that Super Bowl team from 2 years ago than the team that missed the postseason last year.
Yeah, you're right. And last year, I think they were obviously probably, I don't even say arguably, they probably were the biggest disappointment in the league to take the step back that they did. They are 3-1. I still think Cam Newton needs to play better. The turnovers have still been an issue there. I think he's 5-for-5 right now, touchdown to turnover ratio. Certainly, you know what he can do at his peak. He did it for them during the Super Bowl season. His consistency is going to be a big factor. I think they need to still get Christian McCaffrey going. Also, a credit to Julius Peppers, the NFC Defensive Player of the Week. Had 2 sacks a week ago, 4.5 on the season, doing Julius Peppers things. Now, can he do that against the Detroit Lions, who, you know, once again, as I've said numerous times on the show under Jim Caldwell, they've been able to get off to fast starts, and they're trying to see if they can notch another one here against the Carolina Panthers.
Yeah, and the other game I mentioned as well, Seattle is at Los Angeles to take on the Rams. Traditionally in the NFC West, if there's a team that gives the Seattle Seahawks trouble, it's the Rams, whether they've been good or bad. I think the Rams beat them early last year,
right,
even though the Rams ended up finishing the year 4-12 and the Seahawks went to the playoffs. Now you're talking the Rams are 3-1. A lot of hype, as I said, around them as to just where their season is going with new quarterback Jared Goff and the new coach, the young guy Sean McVay. The Seattle Seahawks are 2-2, still trying to figure things out. This is a tough road game for Seattle going to LA here.
This is the game of the week, in my opinion, because it is going to establish dominance in the NFC West right now, because you have to see what you have in Seattle, if they can bounce back without Chris Carson, and obviously the Rams doing what they're doing so far.
Yeah, all right, Ben, we're going to call that a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, you can find him at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford, at Packers for the team account. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time.